Turn to go!
This is Buccaneers Total Access, with head coach Dirk Cotter.
Fire the cannons!
Brought to you by Frontier Communications. Fios keeps you in the game. Visit FrontierFlorida.com to join the team.
Winston looking left, goes a deep route toward Mike Evans. He hangs on! Touchdown, Tampa Bay! Mike Evans goes up and takes it away from two defenders. What a great throw by Winston!
Now your host, Bucs insider Casey Phillips, and head coach Dirk Cotter.
Welcome in, Tampa Bay. Happy Friday afternoon. One of the best hours of the week, right? We hope everyone's heading home from work, getting excited for an awesome weekend. I know we are excited for Buccaneers weekend, heading to historic Lambeau Field to take on the Packers. And we are so excited, as always, to have head coach Dirk Cotter here with us. And you're going to get to ask him all of your questions. Hashtag Bucs Radio on Twitter. You can also submit them in the feature section of the Bucs app. Or here are your phone numbers. Hillsboro, 813-990-4620, Pinellas, 727-461-4620, and toll-free, 888-546-4620. Coach, how are you doing this afternoon?
How are you doing, Casey?
Doing great. All right, let's get right into it here. Looking back at that Atlanta game, Jacob had the question. It seemed like the run game was rolling a little bit better. Did you see it was because of Peyton Barber or the O-line or both?
I'd say because of the O-line. I mean, yeah, Peyton, you know, Peyton had a couple of touchdowns from inside the two-yard line. But, yeah, I mean, we were running good with Doug in there until he got injured and had to come out. So, yeah, I'd say the O-line.
All right. Paul says, what are the pros and cons of having such a big rotation of running backs, like using four in a game?
Well, I think four is too many to use in a game. We used four in the last game out of necessity, you know, because Doug got hurt. You know, I think 2 to 3 is the right number. Usually what happens is you aren't able to stay healthy and stay in your rotation. When we ran the ball really good in 2015. We had a two-man rotation. It was Doug and Charles Sims, and they stayed healthy the whole year. They both had really good years. You know, we just haven't been able to find the right mixture, the right rhythm this year. We have at different times played up to four guys, but in a normal game, it's tough to do more than three.
Okay. We have a lot of questions about the O-line this week. I can tell the IR stuff and everything is on people's minds. Michael wanted to know, are you worried about potentially putting Jameis out there without two of the most consistent O-linemen?
No. You know, I have faith in the guys that are going to be playing. I mean, you got to remember, that's the reason that we kept veterans like Evan Smith and Joe Hawley on our team. Now, that's not saying we're not going to miss Ali and Dot, because they were playing as consistent as anybody. But, you know, we've been fortunate that we haven't had to have anybody miss on the O-line, and now we missed two in the same game. But I'm not worried about it, no.
Jamie wants to know, why has this line seemed to be better at pass blocking than run blocking, and what are the big differences in why one can be successful and another one not as much?
Yeah, that's a great question right there, and I agree. We have been, I think we're one of the, you know, top 7 or 8 O-lines in the league as far as pass protection goes, but, you know, not so much in the run game. And, you know, I just think in this day and age where you're always outnumbered in the box, so you have to adjust your schemes where you're usually trying to block 7 with 6, or 8 with 7, that, you know, run blocking, I just think it's easier for the defense to grab and shed their guys, where in pass blocking, you know, you basically just have to stay between your man and the quarterback. That's a good question. I don't have a great answer for that, but I think we are definitely better at pass blocking than in run blocking.
All right, we got a question on the Bucs app from Justin, who says, in an alternate universe in which you are a defensive coordinator, would you run a 3-4 base defense, 4-3, or hybrid?
Probably hybrid. I think I think a mixture is good if you have the right personnel. The advantage of 3-4 is if you've drafted and you've built your team towards a 3-4, that means that you have more linebackers on your team, thus possibly more pass rushers and definitely more guys that can contribute on special teams. But if you haven't drafted that way, if you've drafted towards defensive ends, I think it'd be a 2 or 3 year transition player to get the right number of guys at the right spots. But I think a lot of teams are going the hybrid route now, you know, especially on third downs.
All right. Alexis wants to know, will you change your offensive game plan at all to account for Jameis maybe being rusty or overly excited to get back in, maybe call things a little more conservative at first to help ease him in?
Well, in case this is being piped into Green Bay, Wisconsin, I probably shouldn't say that.
That's fair. That's very fair. Okay, Roger wants to know, who should make the Pro Bowl on the team this year from the Bucs if you got to pick?
Yeah, I got asked that earlier in the week. And, you know, to be honest with you, we do as coaches get Pro Bowl ballots. And every year when we get them, I'm always shocked, like, we're voting for this already. I mean, you know, you almost have a third of the season left. So I really don't give a whole lot of thought to that kind of stuff at this time of year. You know, off the top of my head, I think that Lamonte David and Gerald McCoy on the defensive side are having really good years, and they're two guys that have been to the Pro Bowl in the past. But, again, I think it's just a little too early to say that.
Yeah, it's sad that the voting has to close so early because I'm sure a lot of fans feel that way too, that they want to see a little bit more maybe even. Scott wants to know, how has Jameis looked this week in practice, and do you worry about him being rusty since he's never had to sit out before?
Yeah, of course you worry about that. And, you know, this is uncharted territory for Jameis, you know, because like you just said, he's never had to sit out before at any level. And, you know, I think when a player misses three games, there could be a little adjustment period, not from knowing how to play your position, but just the speed of the game. The speed of an NFL game is different than the speed of practice, no matter how much you try to make those alike. And, you know, could there be an adjustment period? Yes. But every player is different. So not really sure how that will go, but, you know, we're going to find out on Sunday.
All right. Nick wants to know, how many people on staff work on a scouting report for the other team? For example, how many people have helped you scout the Packers for this week?
Well, the actual scouting report is done by our personnel department, and they have a team of four or five guys that work to put the scouting report together. Usually one or two people have scouted the team live, you know, been to one of their previous games, and then the rest of the scouting report is put together off of film study. And then once we get the initial scouting report from the personnel department, then all of the coaches then have a hand in putting their own spin on it from their own film study. So, you know, when it's all said and done, it's quite a few people. But from the scouting department, 4 to 5.
All right, we've got a few different questions. Everybody wondering about playing in the cold up in Green Bay. Aaron wants to know, you prep the team for noise with music in the indoor. Is there anything you can do ahead of time to prep the team for cold?
Not really. You know, and cold varies. You know, we're obviously spoiled here with the great weather that we have. And I think we're going to get really lucky because the weather report is mid-40s for Sunday. It could definitely be a lot worse this time of year. My experience has been I've been coaching warm weather teams for many, many years now, you know, 12 in the NFL and another 6 in college. I think if it's not just bitter cold, those bitter cold games are just rough no matter how you slice it. But if it's a game like just in the 40s or 50s, 30s, 40s, 50s, for that matter, I think the players enjoy playing in that. I think they like it. Teams I've been on They've looked forward to it. You know, if it's not just freezing cold where you got to have coat and gloves on every second you're not in the game, I think the players enjoy the change.
And the other one about the cold was Jackie wanted to know, what are the things that the team does to minimize the cold factor during the game itself?
Yeah, well, technology and, you know, your gear providers have come so far. First of all, you know, we have cooling benches when we play games in Tampa. When you're on the road, for games like this, you have heated benches. It used to be like portable heaters, but now the benches are heated. You know, the gear that's available for these guys from, you know, in the old days, you might even wear thermal underwear, but these days everything's so high tech with the dry fit stuff, whether it be tights, undershirts. You know, guys can wear either have hand warmers like for a quarterback, or the portable hand warmers on the sideline. Players almost always wear gloves anyway. There's just a lot of technology available to the guys from an equipment standpoint.
All right, we still have tons more time here with head coach Dirk Koetter. Plenty of time for you to get all of your questions in. You can send them in on Twitter using hashtag BucksRadio. You can also submit them in the feature section of the Bucks app. Or hear those phone numbers one more time. Hillsboro, 813-990-4620. Pinellas, 727-461-4620. And toll-free, 888-546-4620. Buccaneers Total Access with head coach Dirk Koetter, brought to you by Frontier Communications. This is Buccaneers Radio.
Buccaneers Total Access, brought to you by Frontier Communications, now continues with head coach Dirk Koetter and Bucs insider Casey Phillips on Tampa Bay Sports Radio, 620 WDAE and 95.3 FM, home of the best Bucs coverage.
Welcome back into Buccaneers Total Access here with head coach Dirk Koetter. Plenty of time still for you to get those questions in for him. Hashtag Bucks Radio on Twitter. You can also submit them in the feature section of the Bucks app or give us a call. Coach Bob wants to know, how would you rate the Packers' pass rush, and what kind of a test will it be for this different O-line group this week?
Yeah, I think the Packers, as far as just number of sacks, they're not ranked that high, but they've got Clay Matthews, who, you know, when he's healthy, is as good a pass rusher as there is in the league. He's missed the last game or so with a groin. I think he's going to be back for our game. And then their leading sacker is Nick Perry, their other outside linebacker that has 7 sacks on the year. But what they do that creates problems is they, in third down situations and in obvious pass situations, they give you a lot of five-man rush where they try to create 5 one-on-ones with your O-line, so you can't give anybody any help. You can give them a little chip help on the edge. And so, yeah, I think anytime you're playing on the road, you've got to remember, when you have to go to a silent count, your guys are a half count late off the ball just because they can't hear. Also, another thing that affects the rush a lot is, are you playing from ahead or playing from behind? As long as the game is back and forth, it's a close game, hopefully we can get the lead, you can still run the football, you can get your play-action game in there, that slows that pass rush down. They can just pin their ears back and you're down by 2 touchdowns, they know you're going to throw it every play, then I think their pass rush is very dangerous.
Yeah, it's a great point. Robert wants to know, why do you feel comfortable starting Jameis when there is potentially a risk of more injury?
Yeah, again, I've been asked that question a million times this week, and what people have to understand is every time a football player, any position, goes on the field in an NFL game, yeah, there's risk of injury. I mean, it's a violent and dangerous sport. Those decisions are made by medical professionals. I mean, we have a team of doctors, a team of trainers, and any player, again, not just Jameis, but any player, when the medical staff deems that they are at no further risk, no more risk than they would normally be in the course of a regular game, well, they want to play. The players want to play, and that's what they're paid to do, and that's the situation here. So, you know, anyone that says there's more risk, that's just speculation. I mean, there's no there's nothing to back that up. There's the same amount of risk. There's the same amount of risk as when Jameis first came into the league or when we played the opening day. There's no more risk. So, knock on wood, nothing happens to Jameis or any of our players. I mean, we don't want to see anybody get hurt out there.
I love that. I actually think I heard you knock on wood. Is that accurate?
Yep,
there it is. Yep. I love it. We did here too, so don't worry. We got it covered everywhere. Okay, David said, how has it been harder to scout the Packers offense than other teams when it's been so up and down recently? Does it make it hard to know what it will look like this Sunday?
Oh, not really. Coach McCarthy, he's been at it a long time, and they've got a system that they run. They have had injuries. Obviously, they're playing their backup quarterback. He played his best game last week. And they were on their third running back Sunday night against Pittsburgh. Their first and second string running backs were hurt. And at least one of those running backs, Ty Montgomery, the converted receiver from Stanford, he'll be out in our game. Jones, one of their rookie running backs from UTEP, he's a question mark for our game. And then their other rookie from Jamal Williams from BYU, he's more of a power back. It looks like he'll be the starter.
We're talking to head coach Dirk Koetter here. Colton says, knowing some O-linemen are out, do you put your better blocking running backs and tight ends in there more often?
possibly. Yeah, I mean, possibly. I mean, I think all of our running backs are pretty solid blockers. And we have different packages with our better blocking tight ends. So based on the type of play it is, yes, that could happen. But that's really, we do that all the time. You only have 46 guys up. On a normal game, you have 22 players on defense, 21 players up on offense, and three specialists, the kicker, the punter, and the long snapper. So, once your players are up, the 21 guys on offense, other than the backup quarterback, you're trying to find roles for everybody else to contribute in some way. Some of that is on special teams, but, some of it is you got your blocking tight ends and your backs, as Colton mentioned.
We got some people pretty excited about Anthony Auclair and his potential, it sounds like. Adam says, how would you rate his performance in the first couple games, and what do you like about him?
Well, what we like about him is from the first time we saw him, we think he has a really nice upside as an eventual starting Y-type tight end. That's your tight end that plays on the line of scrimmage and has to be able to block a defensive end and is still a threat in the passing game. Now, we also drafted a guy like that, our first-round pick in O.J. Howard. So that's the reason that Anthony hasn't been up until 2 weeks ago. And we've needed him to kind of play in that fullback role, which really isn't what he's best at, but he's done a nice job of getting in there and getting better at it. He's also helping us on special teams right now. But, your young players, he's a rookie. He's been on our 53-man roster all year, got his first taste of real football 2 weeks ago, and I think we'll continue to see him get better and better. There's definitely adjustment to the speed and toughness of the game, but Anthony's held up well so far.
Yeah, that goes well into the next question we had about him. Justin wanted to know, what were the biggest learning curves for him, and how did you try to help him coming from Canadian football and English being his second language?
Well, he did it on his own. He took the initiative. He's a really good learner. He puts a lot of time in study wise. He does a lot of extra meeting time. He's in there early every morning before our regular meetings with the players start. He's in there meeting with tight end coach Ben Steele. He's a student of the game. He's definitely learned and listened to the other tight ends who have more experience than him. As far as the language thing, there's no issue with the language. I mean, you just got to get past his French-Canadian accent, but that's no issue. I mean, we kid him a little bit, but, Anthony, he's going to do fine in the NFL.
All right, Randy says, are you happy you don't have to face Aaron Rodgers, or do you want to beat the best?
Both. Both. Yeah, both. I mean, gone against Aaron Rodgers a few times before, and he's definitely one of the best. At the same time, I mean, you're not rooting for anybody to have injuries on our team or anybody else's, but, you know, at the same time, the name of the game is giving yourselves the best chance to win, and whether it's our team or their team, you know, if you take a top player out, then that gives us a better chance, or should anyway.
Brent Grimes was asked about this on Monday on the radio show, but what do you think are the pros and cons of DBs covering a guy versus an area of the field?
Okay, well, here's the pros and cons. People don't seem to understand this. Is the only way a DB can follow a receiver all over the field is if you're in man coverage every time. Because if you're in zone coverage and he goes over there, when we see teams that do that to, say, Mike Evans, and they're in zone coverage, so what we do, motion Mike Evans across to the other side. Because in zone coverage, that corner is not going to run across. Once he's on one side, he's going to stay on that side. So that's the pros and the cons. If we really wanted to say, okay, we want Brent Grimes to cover Julio Jones every single play, then we would have to play man coverage every single play. And that in itself, there's a whole set of pros and cons based on that. That affects how you fit the run as well. Very few teams play man-to-man coverage every single down. I mean, nobody, really. So I think that's the thing that most fans don't get. Atlanta moves Julio Jones all over the field. He lines up in the slot. He lines up as the number three receiver in a trip set, meaning the third from the outside. And, you know, they motion him all over the place. They get you in stacks. They get you in bunch sets. So, you know, when they say, why don't you just have Brent Grimes cover him all over the field? Well, that's not realistic.
Yeah, that's a good point. And this one sounds like it might be in response to earlier you talking about Gerald and Levante being good options for the Pro Bowl, maybe. Tori wants to know, to those of us who aren't as expert on it as you and don't watch as much film or practice, why is Gerald so dominant, and what do you think fans don't always know to appreciate about him?
Yeah, because fans, and hey, I'm like this too. When I'm watching a game, you watch the football. I mean, you watch the ball. You watch the quarterback. You watch where he throws it. You watch the receiver. You watch the running back. I mean, very few people, you know, it's tough to sit there and say, okay, I'm not going to watch anything else except the defensive tackle the whole game. I mean, just nobody does that.
Except maybe Gerald's dad.
I doubt Gerald's dad even. if you're just watching Gerald every play on tape, he's constantly getting double teamed. He's got a great first step. He's got one of the fastest get-offs in the NFL. So the only way you really stop him is you double-team him with the center and the guard, or the guard and the tackle. And in theory, his disruption of the offensive line should benefit the other adjacent defensive linemen, the end and the other tackle. So that's the thing that people don't notice. And, you know, when a guy gets voted to the Pro Bowl five straight years, I mean, sure, there's a fans vote involved in that, but then there's also the coaches and the players vote. And that's where Gerald has the respect of the league, is with his peers, the other players and the coaches.
Which is huge and shows just how good he is. Doug tweeted in and said, since you were speaking of blocking tight ends, could you rank the tight ends in terms of blocking?
Well, of course I could, but I'm probably not going to do it on the radio.
That's fair. Okay, Mason wanted to know, what made you decide to activate Bobo Wilson, and how has he grown since training camp?
Well, that was a decision that was made, you know, by Jason Light and along with myself, and, you know, mainly because Bobo is, has been a handful for our defense every day in practice. How he's grown is he's learned a lot about the pro game. He's become a lot more disciplined in everything he does, from blocking to route running to understanding that you just don't go out there and run a million miles an hour every play. You have to know your splits. You have to know your alignments. You have to know more than one position. You know, to get up on game day, you've got to be able to help on special teams. So, you know, usually you just call that being a pro. He's grown as far as being a pro. And I said, I think earlier this week in the media, you have some guys that start off at a much higher level, but as far as point A to point B, he's probably improved as much, if not more, than any other guy on our team.
That's really interesting. We have a couple people who are very curious about the IR after a couple moves this week. Nick wants to know, have you ever put someone on IR and regretted it?
Well, that's a good question right there. There's very specific rules on IR. And, until I became a head coach, heck, I still don't have them all figured out. But we have Jason, of course, and Mike Greenberg and John Spytek, those guys that do that. But this is the first year that you've been able to put players on IR, and instead of just being able to bring one guy back, you could bring two guys back. The only guy that we brought back was Ryan Griffin. Now, by bringing back, they have to be, you know, healthy enough to come back. The other players that we've put on IR, you know, would not be healthy enough to come back based on how many games are left. So let's just take Allie and Dot. We have five games left, and the medical staff deemed that they had six-week injuries. Now, that's not an exact science. I mean, it could be, you know, a little bit more, hair less. But, they have to – it's hard to hold a roster spot for somebody that's not coming back when our team in general, we need guys to practice too. So, normally when you put somebody on IR, no, you don't regret it because their injury is significant enough that they couldn't help your team anyway.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think that is one of those rules, the IR. Like you said, there's a lot of that in there on the personnel side that fans are very overwhelmed by. There's a lot of rules there. All right, Joel wants to know, how is it different prepping for Hundley compared to Rodgers?
Well, it's really not that different because, Rodgers is probably known as the best scrambling quarterback in the NFL. I also think that's Hundley's strength. Going back to when I watched Hundley as a high school player back in the Phoenix area, watched him at UCLA, and I think he is a really good scrambler, and their receivers play off of that well. The difference is, Hundley hasn't been the MVP of the league and won a Super Bowl. I mean, he's started four games in his career. So, but as far as mobility, they are similar. But, obviously in four games, you don't know all the tricks of the trade like Aaron Rodgers does. And, Hundley's – the knock on Hundley to date, I mean – again, he's only played four games, but the knock on him, was that he wasn't a consistent enough passer out of the pocket. Time will tell if that's true or not.
All right, that's interesting. That point will lead right into our next question we had about preparing for Hundley and what film you watch of him. We're going to take a quick break here. Still plenty of time for everyone to get their questions in for head coach Dirk Koetter. Use that hashtag BucksRadio on Twitter. You can also submit them in the feature section of the Bucks app, or you can give us a call. Buccaneers Total Access with head coach Dirk Koetter, brought to you by Frontier Communications. We'll be right back. This is Buccaneers Radio.
You're listening to Buccaneers Total Access, brought to you by Frontier Communications with head coach Dirk Koetter and Bucs insider Casey Phillips on Tampa Bay Sports Radio, 620 WDAE and 95.3 FM, home of the best Bucs coverage.
Welcome back in, Bucks fans. Hope everyone's weekend is getting off to a great start. We're just past the halfway point here with head coach Dirk Koetter. You can still send in those questions for him. Hashtag BucksRadio on Twitter. Also, the feature section of the Bucks app, or you can give us a call. I'll read those numbers off one more time. Hillsboro, 813-990-4620. Pinellas, 727-461-4620. And toll-free, 888-546-4620. We got a caller on the line right now. We got Tommy from New Jersey. Go ahead, Tommy.
Hey, Case. How you doing there, Coach?
Hey, Tommy.
Hello. Okay, I missed you last Friday, but I was down at the game in Miami. So win's a win that way. It's So this is a confidence call. I hope you and Coach Smith have a good game plan for Sunday. And I hope you have a good flight tomorrow and an even better flight coming home Sunday. So around 4 o'clock, I'll have a nice cold beer for a victory beer. So keep the boys going. Stay warm Sunday and come back with a win.
All right, Tommy. Thank you very much. Appreciate the call.
Always love that. Tommy's always here to give that boost going into the weekend. All right, Rodney says, how hard is it to get players to be disciplined in the system and stay in their zone or gap and not get out of position trying to be the hero and make a play?
Yeah, that's hard. I mean, that's the epitome of discipline right there. I mean, when we say anybody, any team, when you talk about inconsistency or not being disciplined, I mean, that's the whole trick right there, because you know, these guys, the players, they want to make plays. I mean, that's what they're trying to do. I mean, they guys get paid more if they get more sacks or, you know, catch more touchdowns. So it's a catch 22. At the same time, it's a team game, and you need everybody on the same page and doing their jobs.
Yeah, someone who seems to have been doing a pretty good job of their job is Kendall Beckwith. Kyle wants to know, he had the impressive forced fumble Sunday, and Coach, you had said you were amazed with his progress before the season. Has he continued to progress at that rate during the year?
Well, yeah, he has. The thing that people have to remember is, you know, when he kind of burst onto the scene, he was playing inside linebacker, so he was... You know, in our defensive system, the inside linebackers are set up to make the most plays. They're going to have the most tackles. So when Quan and Levante were injured at different times, Kendall was taking their place, and he was making a lot of plays. Now he's still playing between 30 and 40 plays a game for us. But now because we have so many injuries at defensive end, he's playing the Sam linebacker, the outside linebacker in base. And when we go to our rush packages, he's playing like a defensive end. And so, you know, he's not racking up the stats like he did before. To me, that's just further testament to his versatility and his progress as a rookie. All that's just going to make him more valuable and a better player in the long run.
And then he, part two of his question was, do you think he could be as good or better than Quan or Levante?
Yeah, I do. I think he could be a similar type player.
All right. Ryan said, there have been a lot of roster moves this week. What are the challenges of adding players this late in the year, and how do you try to get them up to speed, even if it's just on the practice squad?
Well, guys that have been on your practice squad, they should be up to speed because they're in the meetings every day. And you know, whether you're on the 53-man roster or you're on the practice squad, if you're in the room, you're expected to be preparing like you're going to play. Now, the challenge is we had to bring some guys in that haven't been in the building from outside. And, yeah, that's a huge challenge because those guys are, you know, they're learning a foreign language. Like we brought an offensive lineman in this week onto our practice squad, and he'd most recently been on the Tennessee Titans practice squad. You know, luckily, you know, he was telling me he can't believe how similar our playbooks are. That's based on the fact that when I was in Atlanta, I followed Mike Mularkey, but so we run the same system. But a lot of times that's not the case. And, you know, guys coming in at this point in the year, they're lost. So the position coaches are having extra meetings with them and, you know, trying to catch them up. But at this point in the year, that's a tough, tough duty.
Yeah, the second part of his question actually plays into that he wanted to know, does that weigh into whether or not you bring up a guy from the practice squad or an outside person?
Yes, definitely does. It definitely weighs into it. The other thing you got to remember, at this time of the season, there's not a lot of Pro Bowl players walking around there on the street as free agents. I mean, it's, you know, the guys that are available from outside, it's a much smaller pool of guys that's available this time of year.
That's a great point. Matt said, when there isn't much pro film on a guy like Hundley, will you go back to college even to get a read on him, or is that too different of a situation to help much?
Well, that's a possibility, but, you know, Hundley's been in the league for 3 years, so, and Pittsburgh was his fourth game start, and we usually do a four-game breakdown, so we have plenty of film on him. Plus, you know, for the other time he's been in the league, our scouts, our pro scouts that we talked about earlier, they've graded every guy in the NFL based on his preseason film, and they update those grades every year. But the fact that he's played the last four games, yeah, we have plenty to go on.
We're talking to head coach Dirk Koetter here, and Brock says, why have Cam Brate's targets seemed to decline a little bit recently?
Yeah, mainly because OJs have gone up, and, you know, we talk about this targets. Targets is an easy stat, right? How many times did the guy get the ball thrown at him in a game? That's a target. But the target doesn't indicate who the play was really designed for. You know, we might have eight plays in a game where if they play the coverage we think they're going to play, Cam would be the targeted guy. But they either don't play that coverage, or they cover that guy good, so the quarterback throws it to somebody else. So, you know, you could have a lot of stuff that's in the coach's mind and the design, the game plan, is targeted one way, but, you know, the quarterback's not always going to that receiver. He's going based on what the defense does. So, and then the other thing is, it's just weird how certain players seem to jive more easily with certain quarterbacks. And when Jameis came here as a rookie, Cam was the first one to have a connection with Jameis. And, you know, it seems like when Fitz was a quarterback, you know, for one reason or another, he seemed to find OJ a little bit easier. I can't always explain that.
Yeah, that's true. The quarterback and target connection is always an interesting one. Sean said, you've coached in enough different climates at this point. How do you think weather actually affects teams that you've coached, and do you change anything about the game plan, whether it's extreme heat or cold, rain, snow, et cetera?
Yeah, if it's really extreme, it really comes down to the field conditions. And extreme cold and extreme wind are the two things that hamper your game plan the most. Most of the fields that we play on, you know, it would have to be such a tremendous storm. You know, these fields can all take a lot of water, but if, you know, you get a crazy monsoon type storm and you're still out there playing. But, you know, just a 40 degree day like we're going to have, that's nothing. Or a 95 degree day, that's not going to affect your game plan. It's going to maybe affect your depth. So, you know, I've been fortunate. I haven't had to be in a whole lot of bitter cold games, but bitter cold games definitely affects the passing game a little bit. But, 40 degrees, that's nothing.
Craig wanted to know, have you ever thought about putting the footballs in a freezer before practice to prepare for that?
I have not thought of that, but, you know, it's not going to be freezing, so don't have to worry about it this week.
There you go. Chad wants to know, are you excited to go to Lambeau, and would it mean something extra for you to get a win there as a head coach?
Absolutely. I love going to Lambeau, and, you know, you always want to get a win no matter where you go. That would certainly be very cool to win there. But, you know, when Tommy called in from New Jersey, Tommy was down at the Miami game, and he said it best, a win is a win no matter where it is.
I like this question we got from Dennis here. He said, name the one player, pro or college, you have coached that you would build a franchise around, and then he said you cannot include Jameis or Gerald.
Build a franchise around. Well, I think Matt Ryan and Julio Jones in Atlanta, and you know, when I first came in the league at Jacksonville, he was a little bit towards the end of his career, but Fred Taylor is a running back. Those would be the guys that I'd say off the top of my head.
That's really interesting. Eric said, how has Peyton Barber progressed since last year? I remember seeing him coaching up a rookie on Hard Knocks, which seemed to suggest he felt like he had definitely grown and matured.
Yeah, he definitely has. you know, I think like a lot of young backs, the biggest adjustment is pass protection. The number of protections that you have, and then the fact that defenses are always going to challenge running backs to see if they can protect. Yeah, that's a feature that they had on Hard Knocks was Peyton telling one of the other rookies that exact same thing had happened to him the year before. It was ironic because it was almost exactly the same thing that had happened to him the year before. But I think Peyton's improved in all areas of his game. You know, he came out of college early, and he really hadn't played a ton at Auburn. So he's still a relatively young player, and he's learning all the time. And I still think his best football is ahead of him.
Very, very true. Wes wants to know, it seemed like a number of Buck players were slipping down in Atlanta. Do you have any input on what shoes players should wear on the different fields?
We talk to them about it all the time, and they definitely have a different selection now. When you're playing on turf, like you did in Atlanta, you know, there's only so many turf shoes, but when you're playing on a grass field like we are this week, you know, there's different lengths of cleats, and you know, the most heavy duty or what's called a seven stud cleat. And you know, we mainly had one player that had the biggest issue falling down in Atlanta. But we're always talking. That's one of the things I think on our last show, people were asking about, you know, different sight lines and different. We always are talking to the guys about going out in pregame before warmups and, you know, testing their cleats and making sure they feel good about the shoes they have on, because they do have a different variety of shoes that they can wear.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Brent Grimes mentioned that on Monday, that's basically his one warm-up thing he does every week is go out there and do some hard cuts to test the cleats. So obviously a vet has learned over his time in the NFL how important that is. All right, we're going to take another break here. Still one more segment where you can get your questions in for head coach Dirk Koetter. Send in the hashtag BucksRadio on Twitter or under the feature section of the Bucks app, or you can give us a call. Buccaneers Total Access with head coach Dirk Koetter, brought to you by Frontier Communications. Don't go anywhere. This is Buccaneers Radio.
Buccaneers Total Access with head coach Dirk Koetter now continues. Brought to you by Frontier Communications on 620 WDAE and 95.3 FM, home of the best Bucks coverage.
Welcome back in, Bucks fans. Time for our final segment here of Buccaneers Total Access with head coach Dirk Koetter. Still a few minutes here for you to get your questions in, those last-minute ones. Hashtag Bucks Radio on Twitter, the feature section of the Bucks app, or you can give us a call. Corey wants to know, how impressed were you with how Jameis handled the time not playing, and what do you think he got out of watching for the first time in his career?
Yeah, I've been asked that question a lot this week, and, you know, I think Jameis handled it the best that he could under the circumstances. You know, uncharted territory for him. He's never had to do it before. And, you know, what he learned, that's not for me to say. That's only for him to say. And, you know, we're gonna find out a lot more about that come Sunday. But, you know, that's a question that Casey, you're going to have to bring up with Jameis when he speaks next, because you know, anything I would say on that, I'd just be making it up.
Yep, that's true. We'll work on that for sure. Phil says, how would you rate Fitz's performance compared to what you guys wanted and expected out of him when you signed him?
Yeah, really, I thought Fitz was really solid in his three games, and I thought he got better, you know, from week one, his first start, to the second and third. We were 2-1. You know, 2-1, lost a close game in Atlanta. You know, when your number two quarterback comes in, what you want to do is be able to keep your game plan somewhat the same, operate efficiently, and more than anything else, not turn the football over to give your team a chance to win. In three starts, we had one turnover in three games. Heck, you'll take that anytime.
That's a great point. We have a phone call here. We got Spencer from Tampa. Go ahead, Spencer.
Yeah, I was just wondering, we have two tight ends, and I'm just wondering, like, why don't we use those tight ends more efficiently, like, as, say, like a New England, even though we don't run a New England-type offense, but I was thinking that the two tight ends will either help Jameis as a check down you know, versus trying to go deep to DeSean Jackson. So I'm just wondering, you know, are we going to try to use that more, or why don't we use it more?
He was cutting out on me there, Casey. I didn't get too much of that.
Yeah, he was asking about, since we have two really good receiving tight ends, big targets, should we use those more for the check down option instead of trying to go deep maybe quite as often to DeSean Jackson?
Well, that's I get plenty of questions on why we don't throw more deep balls to DeSean Jackson. So, you know, the DeSean Jackson crew wants us to throw more to him. I mean, everybody, depending on who they're rooting for, wants us to throw more to their guy. I mean, we try to use all of our weapons. You know, we try to do our best at using all of our guys. When people talk about checkdowns, checkdowns only come up in zone coverage. You know, there are no checkdowns in man coverage because they're either making your guys stay in and block because their man is blitzing and they have to block them. In man coverage, whoever the play is designed for, and sometimes it's a, you know, it's a first option, second option, third option, they've got to win against man coverage. They're you know, a checkdown, the word checkdown refers to when they're playing zone coverage and the linebackers drop deep into coverage and you check it down to somebody in zone coverage. So, yeah, we do that. You know, we do that when it's available. We try to do that. You know, being in a two tight end offense, shoot, no one likes using tight ends more than I do. And, you know, we try to do that. But situation sometimes dictates that you're in a one tight end, three wide receiver offense. And, you know, we do that as well.
Rodney submitted one on the Bucks app asking, do you decide on the uniform color for the games? And also, what is your favorite uniform?
I do not. Decide on that. That's above my pay grade. And my favorite, I like the all white, and I also like the red tops with the white pants. Those are my favorites. But you know, I'm glad that I'm not in charge of that. When I was a college coach and I was in charge of that, it was a nightmare because, like most everything else, you can't please everybody.
That's very true, very true. Andrew wants to know, with such an age difference between Fitz and guys like the rookies or younger players, have you noticed that you need to change your coaching style for the 21-year-olds versus the 34-year-olds?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, veteran players versus young players. But even within that, I mean, you know, there's young players that act even younger than they are. And then there's young players that are very mature, and Chris Godwin is a guy that fits in that mold. I mean, a very mature guy for a rookie. But of course, I mean, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick is a 30-something-year-old man. When you know you got other guys on your team that are 21. I mean, heck, James is 23 years old. So, yeah, of course, you talk to those guys a little bit different.
All right, we got about a minute left here, and Eddie wanted to know, would you want to do My Cause, My Cleats for your game day shoes, and if so, do you know what you'd want them to support?
Yeah, I think I actually thought about doing it, but I really just didn't know how to go about doing it, and that's a lame excuse. I should have done it. If I would have done it, it would have been for the to support multiple sclerosis. Both my mother and my sister have MS, and that would have been what I think this is one of the best things the league does. We have 44 players doing it. The cleats that I've seen so far, there's a lot of cool ones. You know, I'm excited about it.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, Coach, we'll definitely work on that for you next year for sure. Thanks for sharing about that. Thanks for spending time with us as always, and we appreciate all of you spending your Friday afternoon with us. Buccaneers Total Access with head coach Dirk Koetter, brought to you by Frontier Communications. Enjoy that game versus the Packers this weekend. This is Buccaneers Radio.
Buccaneers Total Access with head coach Dirk Cutter has been brought to you by Frontier Communications. Fios keeps you in the game. Visit FrontierFlorida.com to join the team. This is Tampa Bay Sports Radio, 620 WDAE St. Petersburg and 95.3 FM, home of the best Bucs coverage.